This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, the very best bits of today's show from the 20th of January. It is a Thursday. What have we got for you today? Well, Emirates Airline, big story. Earlier this week, cutting 9 of their routes to the United States over fears over those 5G towers that have been installed, or rather switched on this week. The good news, Emirates is going to resume flights this week. Brandy's been speaking to Adel Al-Reda, the COO of Emirates Airline. Up next, she's also been speaking, she's had a busy couple of days, been speaking to the UAE Minister of Energy, His Excellency Sahail Al-Mazrui. He says that the UAE is striking a balance between investing in green technologies like hydrogen, but still investing billions and billions into good old-fashioned hydrocarbons. Both, he says, are really important. Going to get the interview with Etihad Airways. Martin Drew has been talking about Etihad Airways going green in their operations. And finally, do you want to be a millionaire? Well, we can help. Andrew Hallam, the author of Expat Millionaire, joins us. He's got a new book out. Details on the way.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Where we are getting the latest on an evolving news situation, which is concern from airlines about the rollout of 5G towers in the US. Emirates, as we were discussing on this show yesterday, has suspended flights to several of its US destinations because of those concerns. It is a rapidly changing situation, so we are going to get the latest now from the Emirates COO, the Chief Operating Officer, Adel Al-Reda. Adel, it's lovely to speak to you again. Thank you for making yourself available.
Thank you, and a very good morning to you.
Before we get into your concerns about the technology, we have heard that there have been changes overnight. Some of the 5G towers near some airports have not been switched on. Have you changed some of your plans to suspend flights? What's the latest from you?
We have not changed the plan yet, but we have deployed an alternative plan, awaiting for that change to be received. So in the meantime, we have deployed our A380 flight to a three destination in the United States, which is San Francisco, Houston, and Boston. This is in addition to the existing operation of Los Angeles, Washington, D.C.
Okay, but am I right in thinking that you're not operating flights to Chicago, Dallas-Fort Worth, Miami, Newark, Seattle, and Orlando?
That is absolutely right. Until now.
Tell me why you're not flying to those places.
See, as you might have heard already, with the network of the 5G is planned to be switched on in these cities, there is a possibility of interference with the aircraft radio altimeters, as advised by Boeing and as instructed by the Federal Aviation Administration. So with that two directives in place, we decided not to take any risk, as well as many other airlines, of deploying the B777 to this specific destination until it is decided that to delay the opening or switching on these networks, or coming with alternate means of compliance.
Could you not just fly A380s to those airlines instead of the triple, to those airports rather, instead of the 777s?
We can, as we did today. Some of these destinations are not compatible to receive the A380s. Some of the airports will require some additional requirement set up to make sure the ground handling agents are ready, and that was not possible to do it overnight. So that's why wherever is possible, we have deployed the A380 this morning into the United States. But I believe this is temporarily, and I think over 1 or 2 days we might see a change.
So what do you see, what do you want to happen to get your planes back in the air to those destinations?
I think the first thing we want to have the better coordination between the regulatory authorities and the service providers in the United States. And we want to make sure that we do deploy our aircraft safely into this airport and there is no risk of interference for the onboard equipment. So it's one to fine, we accept that there will be a change in the network and the 5G will be switched up. But it's special to with coordination and maybe with the right level of power setting, because as you know, many other countries have deployed 5G, and there is no really issue because the power setup is much more less than was the plans in the United States.
So who are you in discussions with at the moment, and what are those talks focusing on?
We are in discussion mainly with Boeing because they are the aircraft manufacturers, and at the same point are in discussion with the Federal Aviation Administration in the States, and obviously the Federal Communications in the United States. There is the move, as I said, the telephone provider AT&T and Verizon have agreed to delay the switching on of the 5G network around the airport temporarily, I would say, until there is a better coordination and reconfirmation that the boxes on both aircraft are properly shielded, or ensuring there is no interference from the ground to these boxes on board the aircraft.
Could this have been avoided, Adil? It does seem to have suddenly sort of sprung up. Emirates, not the only airline affected. And I'm looking at a quote from Emirates President Tim Clark to CNN, calling the situation utterly irresponsible.
So we were not pleased that it came overnight, that suddenly this interference in there. So there should have been a much more better foundation, and having known for those authorities that there could be that level of interference and impact the safety of the aircraft, they should have not really even planned to launch it until all this issue has been settled and cleared. Safety of operation comes, and it should be is the priority of everybody.
How much of a blow is this to Emirates? How busy are your U.S. flights and your cargo operations into the States at the moment?
You know, when we look, we have a daily flight to 7 or 9 destinations in the States. So there is quite a high level of traffic going on from all over the network of the United States, and from the United States to our network, as well as the cargo operation. Example, we just roughly we look at more than 35,000 bookings from here until the end of the month that could be impacted. But I'm looking forward that maybe by Saturday we are able to recommence our operations in the United States, expecting to receive the new FAA revised directive, hopefully by today or by mid of today.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning. Adil Al-Reda is the Chief Operating Officer of Emirates, talking to us about the airline's concerns and why it has temporarily suspended flights to Dallas-Fort Worth, Chicago, Miami, Newark, Orlando and Seattle. As he said there, the change in the last 12 or so hours is that they are going to be operating some flights to San Francisco and Boston, but they will be using the A380 rather than the 777 to do so.
The phrase you used earlier was that there are different flavours of 5G and they interfere differently with different kind of mechanisms, which is why Airbus versus Boeing, and yeah, they're both excellent aircraft, but Airbus copes better with it, is that correct?
I'm not a tech person, and I think we're going to have to get a tech person on the show, because it's everything from, I mean, you might ask, 5G in Europe doesn't seem to be causing these problems, why not? It's because a lot of the signals of 5G are weaker in Europe. There's also something to do with which way the towers, if you like, the 5G towers actually point, whether they point downwards or not. There's a lot of tech in it. I can barely work the microwave. I think we need to get an expert.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Flicking through the local papers, let's get some more on that big story yesterday, your interview with His Excellency Sahail Al-Mazrui, the Minister of Energy here in the UAE.
Yeah, absolutely. On the floor of the World Future Energy Summit, not entirely surprising to see the UAE's Energy Minister. So I have been speaking to Sahail Al-Mazrui about green energy, but also about traditional energy. And we started off with green energy, asking His Excellency about the UAE's move towards more green energy, particularly hydrogen. This is what he said we were trying to do.
We are planning to have a market share of 25% globally of hydrogen. And we think we can be competitive producing hydrogen and materials produced from hydrogen like blue ammonia and others. Of course, there are challenges that we are working with several countries on how to overcome them, from a technology point of view to implementation, but we are hopeful that together we can make a difference, and UAE will always provide a platform for sharing ideas like this, the Abu Dhabi Sustainability Week. But also we are working with major companies like ADNOC and Masdar and others.
What's your time frame for that 25% of the global market?
Well, we are looking at 2030 to 2050. So now we are detailing the plan, I would say, putting a strategy in the ministry. And once we put that comprehensive strategy, we'll share it with you.
We'll share it with you. Right. Investment, though, he says, is still important. What about the role of hydrocarbons in that transition to green energy? Sahail Al-Mizri says the UAE will keep investing in traditional fuels to keep the lights on and the prices down.
UAE is one of the major producers of hydrocarbon, and UAE believes that we need to help and promote the investments in this vital energy system that is providing us the fuel for the transition. If we're not investing enough, we may have issues. And we have seen it last year where the price is high of gas and coal because of the lack of investments in the years past. That could be counterproductive to the plans that we set, the plans of the different countries. Therefore, in UAE, we are investing and we will continue investing in providing as much as we can to the base load of the conventional fossil fuel. But alone, we cannot do it. OPEC Plus alone cannot do it. We need the help of everyone, shale oil producers in the US. We need the IOCs. And that's, I think, something that's a shared responsibility, not a responsibility of a country or a responsibility of a company.
It's a great interview with His Excellency Sahail that you did yesterday, Brandy Scott. So well done for getting it. But I'm excited to hear his answer to the next question, because you've interviewed him a few times. We've all interviewed energy ministers, and they never, ever talk about the oil price.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting in that last little quote that we heard from Mr. Mesrui, it's very unusual to hear an OPEC minister say we need the American shale producers.
I have picked up on that. Haven't heard that for about 15 years.
Yeah, that's due. It's also very unusual, as Richard said, to get a price for them. But the game is, if you're a journalist, you always have to ask. So in my role, I asked how he felt about the, I think it was Morgan Stanley came out. No, JP Morgan, one of the two, came out and said we could see $120. And as befitting an OPEC minister, he demurred.
I will never give a prediction on a price. We continue to do our work of increasing the supply of 400,000. I'm not worried about the short term, I'll put it this way. I'm worried about the long term if there are voices saying we should not invest. We should work on a parallel track. We should promote, do more renewable energy projects, do more hydrogen. But at the same time, we need to ensure that someone is investing, and that someone needs to be all of the IOCs, all of the producing nations. If some are saying this is not my job and we should not invest, then we will have a problem.
We will have a problem. Well, we've got $88 of oil sitting on the wall at the moment. I don't know if that is a boon for the UAE or a potential worry. I tell you what Mr. Mesrui did say, though, about the investment, where he qualified it. He said investment into fossil fuels at the moment needs to be smart investment.
Here in UAE, we are intended to produce the cleanest barrels in the world by producing, but with the lowest carbon intensity. You have seen the announcement of our national oil company, ADNOC, shifting from a fossil fuel electricity, fired electricity, to solar or renewable energy plus nuclear. That makes the cleanest barrel that you can buy. And I think if others are doing the same, we could sensibly produce and reduce the emission, but at the same time provide the world with the commodity that we need during the transition.
There you go. That's the UAE Minister of Energy, His Excellency Sahel Al-Mazrui, speaking to me on the floor of the World Future Energy Summit.
He speaks a lot of sense, doesn't he? There's been a lot happening in energy. And I thought it was a really good interview you did with him, because he just summed up very eloquently what the world needs to do. Yes, you've got to invest in the green stuff, and we're going massive on green hydrogen, but you've still got to invest in the black stuff, because we need that for decades to come.
And this is the thing. I mean, okay, you would expect, and it's been the rhetoric from OPEC from a while, when we've spoken to Mr. Barkindo, he said the same thing. You need to keep investing in the fossil fuels, and you would expect the people who produce fossil fuels to say this. We would tell you that you need to keep investing in radio, wouldn't we?
We would.
Yes,
indeed.
We absolutely would. But at the same time, it's like your mum said and your kindergarten teacher said, which is you're going to get a lot further if you get on together than if you're fighting. You will do better working together than working separately. And whether it is Lego or whether it is keeping the world's industries and economy afloat, it's the same for oil, which is if you look at green fuels and fossil fuels as opposing, you don't get very far. If you look at them, as you say, working together into this transition, and we will hear this from Manuel Kuhn from Siemens Energy in a little bit, because they are starting to use, you know, and we heard from the guy from NEOM as well, that they are starting to use Saudi's great oil reserves to put NEOM together, but eventually they want to have a 100% sustainable grid.
I like that interview. It was a head of energy at NEOM, the big giga project, the mega city. And yeah, they've got this target for renewable energy. But I like the fact that he was very candid with you and said, look, it's not going to happen tomorrow. When we build this thing, we'll be using hydrocarbons, and we will be for years to come. He wasn't greenwashing. He was very candid about that. And I liked the fact that he was candid.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like I said, Manuel Kuhn, Siemens Energy has just got rid of single-use plastics, which are a derivative of petroleum products, from its offices. And then I started talking to him about his suppliers. And he said, well, you know, you can put some pressure on the big suppliers that you're dealing with who are signing contracts. But if it's the coffee shop on the corner, you're probably not going to change the disposable coffee shops that they're buying in to give you your coffee. So it's slowly, slowly, and you do what you can where you can.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Now we continue the theme of green aviation coming out of the World Future Energy Summit in Abu Dhabi. Etihad Airways has expanded its green loyalty program. It's got rewards for companies to reduce their carbon footprint through carbon offsetting. Joining us on the line now to give us the details is the Senior Vice President of Global Sales and Cargo at Etihad Airways, Martin Drew. Martin, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning to you.
So in simple terms, what are you doing?
Sustainability has always been at the top of Etihad's agenda. It has been for some time now. And in many ways, we see ourselves as thought leaders in this space. We're fortunate enough to operate one of the world's most modern and efficient fleets, with the 787 Dreamliner being our core fleet type. And we'll introduce A350s this year as well. So, of course, another very modern and efficient aircraft. We've also set ourselves some really ambitious targets to reduce our 2019 net emissions by 50% by 2035, and then to net zero emissions by 2050. So I think we can all agree there's a lot of focus on what governments and regulators are doing to battle climate change. But of course, what we also need is corporates to take responsibility to do what they can to reduce their own carbon footprint. And with the recent launch of our Conscious Choices by Etihad Guest, which allows our 8 million members to earn miles for offsetting flights, flying lighter and being sustainable travellers, this is one way that we as a corporate enterprise are empowering and facilitating sustainable action for our customers. Now, we all know that corporates and organisations need transportation, whether it's for travel or their supply chain. So, as you mentioned, what we've now done is we're expanding our green loyalty offering with a number of exciting corporate sustainability initiatives. As part of many sustainability-related announcements we've made this week during Abu Dhabi Sustainability Week, yesterday we launched this special program designed to reward organizations and their staff for making sustainable choices. And in the development of this product, we surveyed many of our corporate partners and now have designed a platform that can be adapted to the unique needs of individual businesses.
Okay, Martin, let me ask you how this works. Let's imagine I'm, say, I don't know, a McKinsey-type consultancy, and I've got people flying around the world typically in comfy seats, business class, which have a higher carbon footprint, or let's say I'm a Huawei or a Samsung and an Apple, and I'm flying quite high value mobile phones around the world for the launch of my latest and greatest gadget, what do they have to do to benefit from this, to get more Etihad guest miles?
So there's three options that we're going to be offering these corporates. So first of all, they will have the ability to make a SAF investment. So sustainable aviation fuel, it's got the potential to reduce up to 80% of net carbon emissions. So we will give the corporate the opportunity to bulk buy SAF from Etihad. Of course, this will be fully accredited and it can be used against the Scope 3 emissions. Today, SAF is approximately 3 to 4 times more expensive than standard jet A1 fuel, but if we can collectively increase demand, of course, that will increase supply, reduce costs, and therefore increase usage. The other option that we're offering is a green surcharge. So basically, we will apply a nominal surcharge to each ticket, and then we'll then work with the business to invest this money in an offset program of their choice, be that mangrove planting in the UAE, community projects, or the purchase of SAF. So all of this goes towards sort of partially paying for the emissions created by that corporate's employees on their business travel. And of course, will be accredited and again, will go against the Scope 3 emissions. And then lastly, corporate conscious miles. So this is our corporate green loyalty initiative. So as business travellers fly on Etihad and earn Etihad guest miles, we will also award miles to the business. We'll then convert those miles to cash and invest in an offset programme of their choice. So again, fully accredited, and can be used to offset against the company's Scope 3 emissions. So this is what we launched yesterday. We're really excited about these offerings. It's resonated very well with our corporate partners, and we've already got some leading sort of global organisations that have partnered us with the launch.
Who are they? Can you give us a couple of names?
Yeah, so CWT, so they're one of the world's largest travel management companies, and also Accenture, of course, the huge professional services companies with over 700,000 employees worldwide. So, and there's many, many others in the pipeline. So it's been very well received, and we're very excited to be launching this program.
Martin, 30 seconds left on this. That's great for the big companies. But what about people like you and I or Brandy? What can we do as individual customers of Etihad Airways? For example, I've got my parents-in-law flying over to see us in a couple of weeks from Mumbai. They're going to fly from either Pune or Mumbai or from India somewhere. What can individual punters do to jump on this green bandwagon?
So through our Etihad Guest program, which is for individual travellers, so conscious choices now by Etihad Guest, you can sign up to Etihad Guest and basically earn miles, which then can be then converted into cash against offset programs or go to our rewards store and actually buy sustainable products. So, individuals can do their part now to fly more sustainably with Etihad.
Great stuff, Martin. Appreciate your time this morning. It's the voice of Martin Drew from Etihad Airways talking about the fact that they are trying to go green when it comes to their operations.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Where the question we're asking this morning is, who wants to be a millionaire?
Who wants to be a millionaire?
I don't.
Who wants to corn a Cartier's too?
I don't.
And I don't. 'Cause all I want is you.
I certainly want to be a millionaire, and one of the best ways to do it is to read the book Millionaire Expat, How to Build Wealth Living Overseas, by a man who's been there, done that, and bought the t-shirt. Andrew Hallam was a teacher living in Singapore and managed to save his salary and become a millionaire and made a great reputation on the back of it. Well, the good news is he's back with a new book. It's called Balance, How to Invest and Spend for Happiness, Health and Wealth. And I'm glad to say he joins us now on the line. Old friend of the Business Breakfast. Morning, Andrew.
Good morning. Thanks, Richard. It's good to hear from you.
Hey, nice to have you on the show this morning. So Millionaire Expat was a big success. Fine. What's new in Balance?
Well, I wanted to redefine what it meant to be successful. I think, when we want to do something and we continue to ask why, the answers will always boil down to some element of life satisfaction. So life satisfaction equals success. Success isn't necessarily the conventional definition, where it's loads of money, big mansion on a hill, driving a Ferrari, because even people who have those things, if you ask them why they wanted them or why they pursued them in the first place, ultimately, if you keep asking why, they'll say something like, well, you know, I wanted to enhance my life satisfaction. But then when we look at research on life satisfaction, it suggests that what's required is far more holistic than that. So I wanted to write the book Balance to redefine a definition or give a holistic definition of success, and then look at what the research suggests with respect to how to increase or how to enhance our life satisfaction, how to maximize life so that we get the most out of it that we can.
Okay, so let's talk about, you talk about the four quadrants that are going to make us fulfilled. Strong relationships, our health, enough money, so cash is part of it, and fourth and finally, a sense of purpose. We can't go through all of them in a short interview, but pick one or two of those that you think are particularly important.
Well, what's hugely important, obviously, is our sense of or our relationships. I mean, we can't be successful regardless of how much money we have. We can't be considered someone, or we can't have full life satisfaction if our relationships are a train wreck. So one of the ideas here is that often if we end up pursuing money or pursuing a career at the expense of our relationships, it can actually end up reducing our life satisfaction. And when we look at research on income as it relates to life satisfaction increases with income up to a certain point, and then there's an actual downward trend whereby more money actually doesn't enhance life satisfaction, it actually reduces it. Now, this isn't going to be the case for everybody, but on aggregate, the research on this is really quite compelling. And one of the reasons is that, you know, we look at a lot of jobs that pay very, very high incomes. They end up being positions that require high levels of responsibility, high number of working hours, which can detract from time that we spend on our relationships and or on our health. So I think it's really, really important just to look at the pursuit of life satisfaction holistically and try to use, you know, evidence-based research on not only how do we enhance our wealth, but how can we also enhance our overall life satisfaction as an overall package.
And you quote research from the psychologist Daniel Kahneman, a psychologist who won the Nobel Prize for Economics, about something called hedonic adaptability, essentially the concept that you buy a posh car, the Ferrari that you mentioned, and you enjoy it for a few weeks, maybe even a few months. But after a while, it's just a car.
Yeah, we get really used to what we own, Richard. So that's the whole concept of hedonic adaptability. And what Daniel Kahneman talks about is he says, we're actually not very good at predicting what will make us happy. And so we often pursue things. We think that things will make us happy, but we get used to the things that we own. You know, sooner or later, that car just becomes another vehicle that gets you from point A to point B. So the behavioral studies on that are fascinating. However, if you're spending your money on experiences, especially if you're able to potentially buy something that brings people together and allows you to build memories, now that's money that can be spent to actually enhance your life satisfaction. If you think about, you know, years from now, Richard, you're sitting with a group of friends around a campfire and you're sharing stories, you're generally not going to be looking back at, let's say it's the year 2025, and talking about the things you bought that year. You're going to be talking about the people that you met, the experiences you had, the fun and silly things that you did. So these become part of our identities. And that's, I think, too, when hopefully when we recognize that, we can reprioritize really what it is that enhances our life satisfaction most dramatically. And it's not things. It tends to be spending money on experiences, if indeed we're spending money.
I hear what you say, but we are the Business Breakfast, Andrew, so I'm going to finish by asking you a question on where we should be investing. You, I have to say, are the architect of the investment strategy of Brandy Scott and myself, which I describe as cheap and boring. Brandy, harsh but fair?
It's working for me at 23-odd% this year, so I'll stay cheap and boring. Thanks for asking.
You said we should just invest in cheap exchange-traded funds and forget about them. Is that still the mantra, or have you tweaked that or finessed that a little bit, Andrew, in the new book?
Oh, no, this is absolutely the mantra. And the less you can do in terms of following the economy, the less you do in terms of tweaking your investment portfolio, the better. I see investment portfolios much like a bar of soap that you have in the shower. I mean, the more you mess with them, the smaller they end up getting. I mean, that's all relative. But if you have a diversified portfolio of ETFs that you're just adding to every single month and you're not doing anything silly, you're just owning the global market, you are going to be 90% of investment professionals over your lifetime. The temptation, of course, to say, well, I want to be in that top 10%, because there's always somebody in that top 10%. So you could follow some sort of guru, or you could try to tweak your portfolio to end up outperforming the market indexes. But the irony is that, of course, the people who are in the top 10% in one given measured time period typically aren't the same people who are in the top 10% during the next measured time period. So the idea that over your lifetime you can be 90% of investment professionals.
Daniel, Andrew, we're out of time. We're going to have to leave it there. Fascinating conversation, apart from the one about the soap. That's Andrew Hallam. He is the author of a new book.
I liked the soap analogy.
Balance: How to Invest and Spend for Happiness, Health and Wealth.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.